From KCRW and KCRW.com, I'm Kim Masters, and this is The Business.
You listen, if you listen and learn, then you're going to be able to do anything you want next time.
Everybody thinks show business is really, really all right life.
Listen
to
him.
Oh, I'm afraid he's gone Hollywood.
This week on The Business, filmmaker Bob Zemeckis spent much of the past decade on motion capture films like Polar Express and Beowulf. Some say he's come back to live action with Flight. Zemeckis says he never left. But first, it's the Hollywood News Banter. Stick around, it's The Business from KCRW.
You can imagine Hollywood, everything is really driven by
making money.
What's with him?
I'm joined by my fellow banterer, John Horn of the Los Angeles Times. Hello, John.
Hello, Kim.
So, John, your paper, the LA Times, has written about this. I've written about this at The Hollywood Reporter. There is a three-way race for the top job at Warner Brothers that has been going on for quite some time now and created, I think, a lot of anxiety and stress at the studio, with three strong executives at a very strong studio being really played off against each other for the crown.
Yeah, there are three executives. There are Bruce Rosenblum, who runs Warner's TV group, Jeff Robinoff, who runs the movie studio, and Kevin Sugihara, who runs video. Three distinct businesses. One's making Two and a Half Men, The Ellen Show. Jeff Robinoff is doing movies. He's doing Chris Nolan things. And Kevin Sugihara is selling all this stuff on video. So three distinct and very separate businesses. But the head of Time Warner, Jeff Bukas, has created this kind of bake-off where they're each competing for the top spot. And it's created a Survivor-like reality show on the Warner Brothers campus where there are all these kind of secret alliances and groups and people not working well together, trying to torpedo the other's chances. And it sounded, I think, almost like a fantasy that you could create this kind of competition and that would work well. And I think it has to resolve itself pretty soonly because people who work at Warner say it's really created a mess over there.
Yeah, I think that this was created by Jeff Bukas, the chief executive at Time Warner, the parent company. He sort of pushed out Barry Meyer, who's the current manager, then asked him to stay when it became clear that he wasn't quite sure who would he really wanted to have running this Warner Brothers studio. And at this point, Barry Meyer has postponed his retirement, but that's going to end at the end of 2013. And the noise around who is going to get the top job has become almost deafening. I just don't know this is the way that you want to handle succession issues.
I think other companies, not just movie studios, when a chief executive retires, they look at their stable of executives generally and pick one of those people to run it. This is kind of unfolding in real time. And I think the one thing we should add is that all three of these executives are incredibly accomplished and successful. Warner Brothers is typically first or second in box office share. Warner's TV has more shows on the networks than any other production company. And the home video division is tops, and income is flourishing. Warner's has long been probably the most successful and stable studio, but this is kind of so opposite to the way things typically run there. That's what I think makes it so newsworthy.
Meanwhile, John, on the television front, you know, we've talked a lot about how viewership is falling off in the fall season, and there's a lot of alarm and concern, but we've also talked a lot about the value of sports, and boy, we are seeing that when it comes to the Super Bowl.
We don't know who's going to play in the Super Bowl, but we do know that people are plunking down a ton of money for 30-second spots. Les Moonves, who is the CEO of CBS, said recently that some of those spots have sold for $4 million. So we'll see more ads from Audi, GoDaddy.com, Hyundai, Best Buy, Mercedes-Benz. You know the roster. But it does, as you said, emphasize how important live sports programming has become to major networks.
And of course, the Super Bowl is the big one. So this is a record average price of $3.8 million for a 30-second spot. And they have almost sold out their inventory. They will collect more than $225 million in revenue. And that's a nice day's business for CBS. Also having a nice day's business is Skyfall, the latest James Bond movie. But, you know, John, we have had guests on the show talk about China and what does it take to get your movie into China. And there's a quota system, as we know, for outside movies that are not co-ventures. And even if you are a co-venture, it's not sure how it's defined that you really are a co-venture and you're going to get allowed in. Skyfall is a victim of all this, and it is not going to be allowed to be released in China until 2013.
China has been very uncomfortable with how popular American films are doing in Chinese theaters. And they've done any number of things, like having blackout dates when American films can't be released, to scheduling very like-minded movies directly opposite each other. Skyfall probably is going to be the most successful, even in inflation-adjusted dollars, of any of the James Bond movies. But again, China is going to penalize it because it wants to protect its own homegrown movie. So even though it's going to come out in 2013, I bet you it's still going to do great business there as long as pirated DVDs aren't available on every street corner in Beijing.
Which they may be already. Thank you, John.
Thank you, Kim.
That's John Horn of the Los Angeles Times. And you can banter about Hollywood news on our Facebook page, KCRW's The Business. By any measure, Bob Zemeckis is an A-list director. His hits include Romancing the Stone, Back to the Future, Castaway, and, of course, the Oscar-winning Forrest Gump. He's embraced new technology on every film he's directed and pioneered filmmaking techniques that are now in common use. But throughout his career, Zemeckis has faced relentless and increasing skepticism. When he used a bold new technique to create realistic interaction between live-action and cartoon characters in the 1988 movie Who Framed Roger Rabbit, animators predicted the movie would be the Ishtar of animation. That's a reference to the infamous 1987 flop with Warren Beatty and Dustin Hoffman. But Roger Rabbit grossed nearly $330 million worldwide, and the technique that Zemeckis used was widely adopted. When the director used motion capture to make The Polar Express with Tom Hanks, critics complained that the characters had that creepy dead-eye look. But that film also did well at the box office, and its 3D version proved for the first time to many industry professionals that that format really could work. Zemeckis loved motion capture and used the technology to make his next two films with less success. Beowulf lost money in 2007. A Christmas Carol with Jim Carrey did okay. But the biggest loser of Zemeckis' career by far was a movie he didn't actually direct, the 2011 3D film Mars Needs Moms. Zemeckis produced the movie through his Image Movers animation facility. It reportedly lost $125 million for Disney, and after that, Zemeckis' deal with the studio was finished and Image Movers Digital was shut down. Now, after 12 years of making motion capture films, Zemeckis has returned to live action with Flight. The drama stars Denzel Washington as a gifted pilot who miraculously lands a passenger jet in free fall, even though he's drunk.
When I say I want you to retract the flaps, retract the gear, trim us nose down, okay?
Trim down, what are you gonna do?
When I tell you I want you to push these forward, full throttle. You got me? Okay, when I tell you.
Wait, sir, what are we doing? Why would I trim down?
We're gonna roll it, okay?
What do you mean roll it?
We gotta do something to stop this guy. Here we go. I've got control.
Flight was made for a thrifty $31 million, astonishing considering the caliber of the talent as well as that dramatic plane crash sequence. Both Zemeckis and Washington had to give up their usual fees to make the film, but they'll do fine if the movie is a hit, and it looks like it will be. I met with Zemeckis in his production offices in Carpinteria, just south of Santa Barbara, right after Flight had a strong opening weekend. I've interviewed him several times over the years, first during the production of Who Framed Roger Rabbit, and this time I was curious about his return to live action and how he made Flight on such a small budget. I mean, was there any conversation like, look, Bob, you know, it's been a while since a conventional live action movie, and so we're going to give you $30 million. I mean, how did that conversation go?
That conversation was very, very straightforward, and everybody understood it, and it was a very responsible way to make this movie. it was very apparent to me that everyone at Paramount really wanted to make this movie. They liked these kinds of movies.
These kinds?
A complex drama that's got moral ambiguity.
Although nobody wants to make those kinds of movies right now.
No. No, they wish they could make those kinds of movies. They like to see those kinds of movies. They're terrified to make those movies because they're very difficult to connect with the marketplace. So the only responsible way to make a movie like that is to say it has to be made for very little money. The filmmakers knew that. The studio knew that. Those were the ground rules. This is, you guys want to make this movie? This is the only responsible way to make this movie. So then the only question was, well, can it be made for that amount of money? And once that, you know, once both I felt that I could and the studio agreed, then there was not a single moment of anything but complete collaboration.
Well, it's a deal. I mean, $30 million for Denzel Washington, he opens movies. He's one of the few who kind of has a steady presence at the box office. And you.
Right. Well, we both understood, and I don't want to speak for Denzel, but I think he agrees with me on this, is that, you know, the screenplay was so good. It was just so good. We had to make it. For me, it was something that allowed me to feel, you know, that kind of filmmaker passion. It was such a boldly written piece. I mean, it was so different that it was like, can I pull this off? It's got no bad guys. It's got no good guys. It's got no obvious ticking bomb plot kind of stuff. And yet it was extremely compelling and very dramatic.
What about the material was so compelling to you? I mean, aside from the suspense, it's obviously got a dark theme of terrible, terrible alcoholism. And I don't know, is it something that you sort of said,
Well, I looked at it and I thought that his substance abuse is a symptom of a deeper problem. I thought that what I saw in the screenplay when I read it was a story about a guy who's just completely disconnected. He's isolated from everybody in the world around him, and he doesn't know what to do.
So is it, am I being too Dr. Freud to say, Bob, is this you?
I think that's the last thing that any filmmaker or artist can do is to try to figure out why they select certain movies that they make. But yeah, you could say that, it's the extension of Back to the Future.
Okay, wait a minute. You're going to have to walk me through that for a sec.
Yeah, no, Marty is in a land that he's isolated. He's in another time zone.
This is the as we age, it gets darker.
No, I mean, if you could read, but that's what film scholars are supposed to do. That's not what filmmakers are supposed to do. We're supposed to make movies.
I mean, I'm going to read you a quote that you gave to the New York Times, which I love. It was great just to do an inexpensive movie. I'm really tired of making these huge over $100 million movies where they literally mean life and death for a studio. It's really rough making these expensive movies. Everyone is hysterical.
That's correct.
Is that the industry now and what's wrong with it?
Well, think about if you make a movie that costs $160 million for the negative cost. I mean, to make a movie, is $100 million to market too much? I don't know. So there you're at $260. So you have to like gross worldwide like $500 million to break even. And how many movies ever do that?
Excellent question.
Yeah. So it's like, of course, everyone's running around hysterical because there's only like maybe three movies a year that do that.
So when you are doing flight, what excites you more? Like, goody, I get to use my tricks to crash the plane for cheap, or I get to do this amazing performance with Denzel Washington?
Both, like it's always been.
Equally weighted.
Equally weighted through my entire career. I think, again, I've said this to you, I've said it to other journalists, I say it all the time, my favorite quote is the Truffaut quote. You know, when Truffaut said a really good movie is the perfect blend of truth and spectacle, we go to the movies to see spectacle. We don't go to the movies to see real life. We have real life that we see with our eyes. Spectacle can be a close-up. I think that's the best number one special effect that there is.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with filmmaker Bob Zemeckis, whose new movie, Flight, stars Denzel Washington. It's his first live-action film after more than a decade in which he was immersed in making motion capture films, including Beowulf and The Polar Express. But to Zemeckis, it's an illusion to say that Flight is a return to live-action.
It's a complete illusion because I never left live-action.
So to you, those are essentially live-action.
What, the performance capture movies? Well, they're the same as live-action to me. I mean, I make them the same. I make them exactly the same. I direct the actors, and then I use the tools of cinema to create the images, except that they're separated in performance capture, and they're not separated in live action.
I mean, one of the things I remember when I visited you, we were doing Polar Express, you felt enormously freed by that technology.
Yes, it was great because I got the best of both worlds, and I still, there are two gigantic advantages to making movies using performance capture. First is for the artist, for me, for the filmmaker, I can separate out the, what I call the tyranny of technology from the magic of the human emotional performance. Like one of the things that might happen on a live action movie is an actor might, in a wide master, do the best line reading of the day. And then when it's time to move in to do the close-up, for some reason, he just can never do it as magnificent with the timing and everything that he did in the wider shot. So because it's the most important line possibly of the scene, you're forced to cut to that close-up using the lesser performance. In performance capture, you get to use that in a close-up, extreme close-up, a wide angle, whatever you want. That performance will work in any coverage that you can imagine. I think that that's a fantastic way to make movies. Look at the roster of actors that I've done performance capture with. The list is huge. Go get Anthony Hopkins. Go get, you know, Ray Winstone. Go get Colin Firth. Go get Gary Oldman, Brendan Gleeson, Malkovich. Get these guys and ask them. I don't think they were lying to me. They loved performing in the mocap movie. So we sit around like we're doing theater all day long. And they get to do the scenes in continuity from beginning to end. They create their rhythm just like they're on stage. And they don't have to break it up and chop it up and get out of rhythm and all that sort of thing because of coverage and everything that you have to do to make a live-action movie, which is fine. The live-action movies are great. So I've had this giant roster of all these manifest actors, and every single one of them has basically said, it's liberating. All I have to think about is performing. The only thing that they miss is the costume. They miss the costume. So we do our best to give them bits of costume with them so that they can remember to touch a sword hilt or whatever it is that they need, or adjust their eyeglasses or whatever the character might find as a character moment. Tom Hanks was interesting because he always used to change his shoes, played four different roles, and then he would change his shoes just so that his feet would feel different when he was doing the different characters.
Coming up after a short break, why Zemeckis is dropping his long-cherished plan to remake The Beatles' Yellow Submarine. To make a comment about today's show, go to kcrw.com/thebusiness. You're listening to The Business from KCRW.
Have you checked out the KCRW iPad app? It's called The Music Mine. Stream music handpicked by our DJs, watch live performances, and find new music. See why iTunes calls it an essential app for music discovery. Download and learn more at kcrw.com/musicmine.
I'm Kim Masters, and this is The Business. In recent years, Hollywood studios have shied away from adult dramas. But director Bob Zemeckis and Denzel Washington were so passionate about the script for Flight that they agreed to give up their usual fees to get the movie made. The movie cost $31 million, a fraction of the usual budget for a Zemeckis film. The film stars Washington as a drink and drug addled pilot. The supporting cast includes John Goodman as his dealer and Don Cheadle as his lawyer.
So, why do we need a lawyer from Chicago?
He who specializes in criminal negligence.
Criminal negligence?
Mm-hmm.
Death demands responsibility. Six dead on that plane. Someone has to pay.
I flew the plane inverted. That means upside down. You have any idea what that's like?
I do. I heard the black box recordings last night.
Oh, you heard those? Are you a pilot?
No.
Then you don't know what they're talking about. All right, let's cut to the chase. Just tell me what it is I need to know, Charlie.
The NTSB GO team also collects blood, hair, and skin samples. An initial report shows that you had alcohol in your system.
Didn't mean anything. A couple of beers the night before the flight.
This toxicology report states that you were drunk. And if it is proven that your intoxication was the cause of the death of the four passengers, now we're going to look at four counts of manslaughter. That could be life in prison.
Washington's performance has Oscar buzz, and New York Times critic Manola Dargis wrote in her review that watching Zemeckis work with a star makes one lament the time that Zemeckis has spent in recent years on motion capture movies such as Beowulf and A Christmas Carol. But to Zemeckis, it's all movie making, and those films paved the way for Flight.
Here's the thing. I was able to make Flight for $31 million because I put together this magnificent team of digital artists when, you know, Image Movers Digital was up and running. Young, unbelievably talented, hungry guys. I was able to do 300 digital shots for very little money. I was able to pre-viz everything I needed to pre-viz to be able to, you know, do that whole plane crash scene for the number that was involved. Everything that I've been doing in the digital cinema for the last 10 years actually allowed me to make this movie for $31 million, which happens to have over 300 shots in it. And I'll go even further. I'll go even further, one step further. I was in workshop theater with some of the greatest actors that exists for the last 10 years doing three of these mocap movies. So when I stepped on the set with this unbelievable cast on Flight, I was ready.
I'm going to ask you about what the status of Yellow Submarine is. Is that going to happen?
I'm not going to do Yellow Submarine.
Because?
Well, for one, is my champion to do it was Dick Cook.
At Disney.
And that would have been really cool. And then I started to think, you know what? I don't want to do any remakes.
You would have had a lot of people after you.
Oh, yeah. No, anybody would, you know, they'll pay me anything I want to remake anything. But I don't want to do that.
Well, I mean, after you, I think people would have jumped on you because you're taking their childhood teenagehood.
Oh, you mean the fans. Yeah. That's the problem with remakes, you know. I mean, you're behind the eight ball from the get-go. And so I don't want to, you know, how many more movies have I got left in me, really?
I don't know.
I'm getting kind of old. So so my feeling is that whatever movies I'm going to make, I don't think I should take those years out of my life and do a remake. Because a Yellow Submarine would have been a 3-year investment.
So is this the template now? Or are you not going to make any template? Keep the budget low. I often feel like it's a salutary thing.
You know what? Here's the thing. I don't have a template, and I've never had a template. I really haven't. See, you're not going to ask me what 99% of all journalists ask me, which is, so what's next?
Okay, so what's next?
No, and of course that's an important journalistic question because, you know, that's the thing. But I never know. I have never, ever, ever. Opposite of conventional wisdom, Hollywood conventional wisdom, which is I've never had my next movie lined up before I've released the one that I'm working on.
Well, you know, whether you like to acknowledge it or not, this is a great thing for you. And you've done something, not just proving that you can make a movie on a budget, but it's an adult drama that's working.
All right, but let's go back to this budget thing. I've always made my movies responsibly. I've never, even Roger Rabbit, Well, maybe Roger Rabbit. Roger Rabbit went over budget, but I've made expensive movies, but they weren't because they were like, you know, were out of control. They were just expensive.
Well, let me clarify on a budget. Today, no Bob Zemeckis person makes a $30 million movie.
Well, I was concerned. I can say this to you now because we're here after the movie opened. You know, my biggest fear was it was going to be the final nail in the coffin. If nobody showed up for this movie, then it would have been the end of all adult dramas probably forever. If I can't pull it off like this, then... And by the way, I don't know. I don't know what the future of the movie business is going to be. You know, I really don't know.
Nobody does.
I mean, but the thing that I scratch my head is when I think about the only movies that have made, you know, that have been big hit movies in the last 15 years have been cartoons and sequels, except for Avatar. And you could throw R-rated raunchy comedies in there maybe. Well, think about it. Avatar is the only movie that's been the number one movie of the year that is an original idea in how many years?
So then you say, well, gee, why can't anybody but Jim Cameron come up with an original idea that sells?
I don't know why that is. I don't know why that is. And I don't know why that is. I have my own opinion about it, but...
Share with us.
Well, my own opinion is that it's just too hard. It's too hard to get any traction on, you know, a really unique and clever idea. And then it's heartbreaking for the screenwriter. I mean, I don't believe I could make Castaway today.
It's just too not classifiable?
It's too not classifiable. I don't think it could happen today. I just see the really interesting stuff migrating to cable television.
That seems to be the consensus, that cable television is the haven. This is the golden age for that.
Yeah, cable television is like, you know, it was like the second golden age of cinema, which was the 1970s. That's where you got all your kind of very edgy stuff and, you know, things that were trying to do things. But here it's a simple, I think it all comes down to the money. If a movie's got to gross like $400 or $500 million worldwide to break even, then everybody has to go see that movie. And if everybody has to go see the movie, then by definition, the movie can't be about anything.
I mean, it's so low and lowest common denominator at that point.
It has to be, right. So you can't try anything because, you know, it's not anyone's fault. It's just is what it is.
I will say you did an adult drama. It worked. Now we have to hope you actually get some credit for it.
Well, look at I'm very pleased that so many moviegoers showed up. So, I mean, now something that you should probably write about is whether or not this will be considered as a fluke by the rest of the industry, or will this be embraced and say, hey, maybe there's a way that we can actually, you know, kind of like climb out of the pre-sold title thing a little bit here. I don't know.
That was filmmaker Bob Zemeckis. His new film, Flight, starring Denzel Washington, is in theaters now. And that's The Business. Darby Maloney produced and edited today's program with production assistance from Ray Guarna. You can listen to us anytime on demand with the KCRW smartphone apps, and you can hear the podcast wherever you download podcasts. The show is produced and distributed by KCRW. I'm Kim Masters. We'll see you next week on The Business.